And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys,
wow.
The Nets have traded for a dynamic two-guard, not named James Harden, Bruce Brown. We're talking about the end of the John and Musa era. And we're going to talk a lot about James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets because there's a lot of angles to this, a lot to unpack, and we're going to unpack it like a family of four coming in and staying a week of vacation at Hershey Park.
Mike, you realize as soon as you hit publish on this episode, something's going to happen. We're going to have to pot again. You realize that, right?
Yes. Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike Arcelo Bryan. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get behind that paywall. $1 a week. $1 a week. TheAthletic.com /GlueGuys. Bryan?
Wow. Mike, what's going on?
The Nets are back.
Back in the news. Back in the news cycle where they belong.
There's so much to discuss on this show. The draft is Wednesday. The Nets made a trade, and the Nets may be on the verge of making an earth-shattering trade involving James Harden. But before we begin, we would be remiss to not discuss and to not lament
a fallen brother.
The end of the John and Musa era, the Brooklyn Nets. This is a really tough day for me. Musa's meant a lot to me. As a fan of basketball,
I mean,
it's a sad day.
You're being hyperbolic, and that's fine because, you know, Zion was our favorite meme. And I think he would even know that. I mean, from the moment, I just thought, like, thinking back to that first press conference with him and Rodion Skurics, and Rodion's is obviously, like, going along for the ride, but Zion is just being, like, mama mentality, boys. We are out here, killer instincts. You know, we're going for the jugular each and every night of our lives. And Rodion's is like, hell yeah, I'm with that. And fed off his confidence. And in a lot of ways, I think everyone fed off of it. And he did to a fault. He was the nexus of the confidence that maybe overwhelmed him at some point. But it surely had its tendrils everywhere into the psyche of each and every individual player. So for those, I think he's a rock of confidence that leaked into the franchise. And we sapped that resource. We took the resource, took everything we needed out of it, and shipped it off to Michigan, where they can maybe get the dregs of it. But that's sort of how I feel about Musa. I loved having him. He was a great meme and a sweet boy. And we're going to miss him.
The rock of John and Bralter, if you
nice.
Will.
Nice.
I, like you, have loved him from the moment my first laid eyes upon his draft profile. If we can dive back into the Draft Express archives for a second, Jonin's photo was him always with his slumped shoulders because he's never learned to properly stand up straight, like myself. And he had a black mask on the basketball court, a Rip Hamilton-style mask, but he opted for the black. And I think it really epitomized who he was. He was an assassin on the basketball court in his mind, and I loved him for it. I loved that every time John and Musa stepped on the court, he was going to fire up the shot the second he got the ball, even if he knew inside his soul the best case for John and Musa would to be a corner three-point shooter. The guy's 6'9", can handle the ball a little bit, but if he could just stand in the corner and shoot threes, he'd be making $15 million a year. But our boy Moose wasn't going to let that happen, Bri.
You know,
he was a killer.
You hear about people playing bigger than their position. Zanamuza was one of the rare guys that played exponentially smaller than his actual, like, you would never have guessed that he was 6'9". But yeah, anyways, and we have Bruce Brown, new guy on the team. Mike, did you watch your YouTube highlights yet?
Yeah, so Bruce Brown is, so when I saw that they had traded for Bruce Brown, that the Nets had traded for Bruce Brown, I was so happy. Not because that I think Bruce Brown is going to forever alter the landscape of the Brooklyn Nets, but he shows that Sean Marks is at least still interested on making wins on the margins. Yes. Bruce Brown is like the NBA analyst's favorite type of player. You know,
the analysts,
not that good.
Came out of the woodwork in support of this thing. One after the other, Mike.
Kevin O'Connor likes it. Zach Lowe likes it very much for the Brooklyn Nets. He's a defensive guard who I asked James Edwards III, who is the Pistons beat writer for The Athletic, what he thought about Bruce. Bruce Brown is no fuss. He's a smart guy, a really good locker room presence, and all defense. And that is the exact recipe of player that these Brooklyn Nets need. And it shows that Sean Marks still cares about the margins, that he still cares about turning Zanamuza in a second round pick into, you know, ultimately like the eighth player on the team. So they took one of the worst players on the team and turned him into a guy who maybe could get you 12 to 15 minutes a game and someone who could, you know, at times play next to Kyrie Irving if you're playing a really dynamic point guard and you need Bruce Brown to guard that really. It's a good move. It's a good move. Musa wasn't going to play for the Nets. He wasn't. Like you said, like he was 6'9", but played like he was 5'2".
Yeah.
Often. Muggsy. He never Muggsy used his size to advantage besides putting up shots.
Yeah.
A great, solid move. And it comes, though, as we're like sitting here on the precipice of potentially, you know, just this earth-shattering basketballreference.com shattering level trade that has just been the smoke from this James Harden fire.
Yes.
Has been billowing. The smoke has been billowing. It is getting into the crockroft of a house. I don't know if there's a word that almost
sure
is that.
I know what that is.
The attic, oh, the but there's croft. Like there's like a phrase in when you're building a home.
Like a crow's nest? What is it? A cockcroft?
I'll look it's it like up the rafters as we're talking. In the rafters of a home.
Yeah. Sounds
because
right.
My home is just, it has no
just rafters.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. It's like I can hang my own jersey up in my rafter.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here and, so by the way, let's cap the Bruce Brown trade. Okay. Excited, happy,
great.
Right?
Love
great.
It. Lock it in.
That's a good move. James Harden, Brian.
Let's start from the beginning. I don't know. Let's maybe not start at the beginning. What do you think? Do you think it's going to happen? Let's just get right into the meat of it.
So here's what I think. And we're going to do positive negatives. We're going to take your emails. And thank you for everyone doing emails. Netspod@gmail.com.
Everyone's doing emails.
My general sense is if Kevin Durant wants it to happen, not even Kyrie Irving, but if Kevin Durant wants it to happen and James Harden only wants to go to the Brooklyn Nets, then it's going to happen. Right? Because I don't think if you're another team in the NBA, James Harden has enough years on his deal where, like, you could trade for him. He couldn't just sit out the year. I don't think Harden's necessarily that guy. But if Harden wants to go to Brooklyn, Brooklyn can give enough of a package that it would make it so Houston would say, okay, like, yes, we will take LeVert, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, and 3 first-round picks. Because that's essentially what it would be. Now, do I think it's going to happen? I don't know. Here's the latest information, Brian. Tweet from Shams Charania as we're recording this at 3:35. This is the latest from Shams about around 3:00. James Harden wants to be on a contender elsewhere, and Brooklyn and Philly are believed to be his top desired trade destinations. But Houston is fully comfortable keeping Harden and Westbrook into the season. Now let's break through down that tweet a little bit. So the two places that constantly have been mentioned are the Nets and the 76ers. If I'm the Rockets, there's no way I'm trading James Harden back to Daryl Morey after Daryl Morey resigned to spend time with his family. And then he spent time with his family for just 2 days and then immediately moved halfway across the country to not be with his family.
Well, okay. So that's an interesting argument. I like it. And I think that it errs. Well, it's more of a projection of yours, right? Because you are spiteful and you would be butthurt. And so you would do this, but I do think that, I mean, we can get into this because addresses it. Well, we'll just get right into the email that I chose. I chose one of the emails. Should I just do it? Because this is basically
Do it. Absolutely.
This is from Treboy Jose. just Jose, or actually, sorry, Jay Cruz. My bad, Jay Cruz. He says, which East teams can beat the Nets offer? And this is the next part of his. How can Harden push his way to the Nets when he has no leverage? Love the pod, but can Brian lessen the I don't know and answers a question with a question? And Jay Cruz, obviously, I feel incredibly seen, incredibly called out for the charlatan fraud that I am. This is how I feel. That's the imposter syndrome that I, you know, wear every day of my life. But I'm a Libra.
That is your style.
I'm a Libra.
Shouldn't feel bad about it.
The problem is I'm just, you know, astrologically inclined to just not be decisive. So what can I do? I can only play both sides of the fence. No, it's a great insight, Jose. It's one of the things that I hate about myself. So I appreciate you pointing it out.
I'm going to fall on the sword for a second. The thing that happens is that I get on a monologue, but I don't give Brian any avenues with which to have his own thought about the thing. Like, I don't tell Brian, hey, I'm going to do this thing. But I just do it on him. And I expect you to have to say words. So I defend you.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best I can do, really. That's my answer. But anyways, I appreciate the email, Jose, and love you back. Love you right back. It's all love in here. But so this goes into which teams can beat the Nets offer. And here's my I'm opinionated about this. And unequivocally, the 76ers undoubtedly can beat this offer with just floating out Ben Simmons. Just the one thing. I did look at some NBA Reddit conversations. I guess I don't know if I'm surprised by this or not, but the general world of the NBA, and this is a pretty, you know, this is a qualitative argument that I'm about to make. They are very low on Caris LeVert compared to the Nets fan base that we cohabitate with. So it is interesting to see just how low people are on Caris LeVert comparatively, you know, to the Nets audience that we often see on Twitter.
But that is the thing. That is hometown bias. Every fan base, we all feel this way. Like, so I don't actually, I obviously Caris LeVert, I think, is more beloved sort of in NBA front offices than Spencer Dinwiddie. But I think, like, per fan base, I actually think Dinwiddie's almost preferred over LeVert. But obviously fan bases don't make trades. But Dinwiddie has been a more consistent performer over a longer period of time than Caris LeVert has. But I think if you're making a trade, I think all front offices all realize that Caris LeVert is a guy who could score you 25 points a game, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds.
You know what the comparison is? It's, you know, often so, like, they talk about as being injury prone or whatever. And I think that the reason that that Nets fans have a different opinion of this is that I kind of think of it like, just because, like, the way that we've talked about this, like, ebbs and flows, which is that, like, he builds up, and, like, starts to play really well and then, like, has a setback with an injury or whatever. Kind of reminds me, you ever see Stranger Things, you know, like 11?
Absolutely.
The character 11, where, like, like, in order to do something great, has to blow it out. Gets blown out. And then, like,
has a nose. Just, like, goes, yeah.
Has a nose. It's sort of the Jean Grey model of, like, superpower, right? You, like, you use it and then, like, you're out. You get to take a nap. And
that's, but, like, a less effective Jean Grey, let's be honest. Yeah. You know, not quite Jean Grey.
Sure.
Maybe Baby Yoda. Yeah. Baby Yoda is, I know you don't watch The Mandalorian.
He faints too. But
He does something nice and then he faints and then he doesn't do the force powers anymore. LeVert really is a Baby Yoda.
So whatever that archetype is of guys that blow it blow it out when they get real powerful, that's sort of how Caris LeVert is. And it's imminently rootable. I mean, think about the characters that we just named. Like 11, Baby Yoda, these are beloved characters because they sacrifice themselves. That's the Jean Grey, not really beloved. Nobody loves Jean Grey, but it's kind of more of a frustration with Jean Grey.
Famke Johnson was the actress who played her in the original X-Men movies, which is weird for me to say original X-Men movies because now I feel like an old man by, like, not Sophie Turner's not my Jean Grey.
Right.
But
fair point.
To answer Jose's question.
Yes.
We're looking at the Eastern Conference teams. So you look at the Eastern Conference standings, and if you understand sort of that Harden only wants to go to a contender, and yes, you could say, oh, what is he? He doesn't really have any power in the situation. You know, he has a contract. The Rockets can send him to whoever. Well, most teams aren't going to be giving up a bundle of assets if they don't have an understanding that Harden would most likely stay. The one exception to that rule was the Kawhi Leonard trade to the Raptors. Really, the Raptors didn't give up all that much. Like, they gave up DeRozan and what else? Danny Green. Danny Green, 2-time champion. Well, 3-time champion, but 2 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe hopefully Brooklyn Nets in the future. I don't know. Okay, so Milwaukee could put together something of like Bledsoe and DJ Wilson and Dante DiVincenzo, but that's not very sexy. Toronto can do the Pascal Siakam, OJ Anunoby deal, which is better than LaVert and Dinwiddie, and they could put together picks, but I have a sense that that's not going to work out overall. Indiana's not going to do it. The Celtics could do a Jaylen Brown and a bunch of picks type deal, but they'd have to do that immediately.
You think Tyler Herro's up on the block yet?
So that's my thing. I think that the two best contenders in the East, if we're just looking at the East, Miami and Philly. Like if you're Houston and you say, oh, we have Ben Simmons for five seasons because that's the control, you basically do like Ben Simmons, Zaire Smith, and whatever, like maybe a couple of other things for James Harden. Like I'd feel pretty good if I was Houston and I was just taking Ben Simmons. And then I take Russell Westbrook and I spin Westbrook off to Charlotte for whatever. Like, what do you do there? But if you're Miami, it's definitely Tyler Herro has to be in the deal. I kind of think Bam Adebayo has to be in that deal. And you're basically saying, we're going to give up Bam and Tyler Herro with the understanding that if we get James Harden with Jimmy Butler, that we're probably going to get Giannis as a free agent. Now, I don't know how the financials of all that works. Like, you would have to do a lot of financial maneuvering to get Butler, Harden, and Giannis all under the cap. Like, Giannis would have to take significantly less money, I believe, to make that happen. But
let me play devil's advocate. Just stacking Tyler Herro, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn against Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen. What's the better combo there?
I say the Nets, right?
I think so. I mean, but I can't tell.
It's weird. Do you think Hero's a better player than... Do you think he has a higher ceiling, better player than Caris LeVert? Because I don't.
So, I mean, the Tyler Herro thing is the one real complexity. And I hate to answer this with another question. Like, it really is hard to know because, like, yes, Tyler Herro had a great bubble, but that doesn't seem to me to be like that's not going to be his homeostasis forever going forward. That would be a really that would be crazy and possible, but I guess I just don't think it as likely as the alternative of him coming a little bit back down to earth.
Yeah. So like, I think Tyler Herro probably does have more value just because he is a rookie. He's how old is he? They call him, by the way, his nicknames on Basketball Reference, Boy Wonder, Bucket, which no one should be allowed to be called Bucket at this point, and Baby Goat, which is pretty amazing.
Baby Goat's good. I think it should be, if anything, a Bucket.
He kind of looks goatish. Yeah. Not, he's obviously greatest of all time, is what I recall him, but he kind of even looks like a goat. Mm-hmm. And I mean that lovingly. Like, Mazel tov to you.
I think we should try to get more into like literal bucket, like I would like an actual, like a literal bucket would be a better nickname.
So he's only 20 years old. He's going to be 21 in January. So I'm excited for him to finally be able to drink alcohol.
That's pretty tasty. Congrats
to you.
So but young.
That is so young. Like the Rockets would have control over him for the next 8 years. Where LeVert, like, you know, you have control of him for another 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, and LeVert's already getting up there in age. LeVert's a better player right now than Tyler Herro for sure. I think if you had wanting one of those two guys to lead your team, it would be Caris LeVert. But I think like the asset, it's Tyler Herro, you know?
Yeah, it's such a funny one because like, Because here's the other thing that people fail to recognize, though, about Caris LeVert is that, again, his ceiling seems very much not like I think he's like 60% of the way to reaching a ceiling for Caris LeVert, maybe 70%. Like the ceiling still looms pretty high for him. Tyler Herro, again, like that's he also has a very high ceiling. It's a tough one. It's a really tough one. I hate to be indecisive on this.
So and that's again, I kind of go back to like this whole thing like. Yes, there are going to be other teams with better packages. Like, I think Denver, you could just, like, you do Michael Porter Jr. and Gary Harris and a bunch of first-round picks and Bol Bol. And that's – Michael Porter Jr., I think, trumps – we're being told that trumps LeVert, trumps Tyler Herro, trumps pretty much everything. I don't know if it does for Jaylen Brown, but Jaylen Brown's, like, another guy that's, like, if he's my best player, like, that's not at all good. I want him to be my third or fourth best player. the Warriors technically could put Wiggins, their current second overall pick, plus the Timberwolves pick next year that they have control over, and then they immediately become like, that's an amazing package. And James Harden on the Warriors just bends my mind. Like, because his style is even more of a shock to the system than, you know, Kevin Durant was.
Well, there's another thing too, which is Miami and Denver have not been like designated one of his destinations by whoever's in James Harden camp who makes those calls. And I wonder why that is, and also if that's a thing that's immutable or that if that'll change. I don't know.
I mean, Miami's really interesting. And I don't like, I would imagine every player at this point would want to be on Miami. The only thing is like that Miami culture that we kept hearing about all the bubble, like how hard they work. Not saying that James Harden's not a hard worker, because obviously he is if he has the level of skill that he has. And Kelly Eco from The Athletic wrote an amazing piece about how much yoga James Harden was doing pre-bubble. But James Harden, I think, from also reporting from Kelly Eco, Shyam Sharani, and Sam Amick, and this is going to go into my positive negatives whenever we get to it, I don't think Harden's personality is like Jimmy Butler vibes. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's very much, I want to get my 35 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists, but I'm not exactly a guy who's staying out after practice with my teammates, putting up shots. I'll work on my own. I'll do my own thing, but I'm not like team surround me. It seemed like Russell Westbrook, which made him chafe the most, was that there wasn't enough accountability. And where does that unaccountability come from? The non-accountant, James Harden. So I kind of think it's a positive and negative about that personality.
Do you want to think about what the movie comp with that? Because it's Platoon. That's what I think of as, with James Harden as Elias. And what's Sergeant Barnes, Tom Berenger. That's it. So it would be obviously he's a Tom Berenger. Come on.
I only played the Platoon video game. I never saw the movie.
Really? Okay. So
I'm not sure how much the video game held to the plot because it was 1987 when the game came out. And I was probably playing it when I was.
Are you still playing it? Speedrunning it. You're speedrunning it now. Yeah. So basically it's the story of Charlie Sheen goes to war, in Vietnam. And there's two like leaders of his platoon, I guess. And one is Tom Berenger, and they're beer drinkers.
That's why the movie's called Platoon.
Yeah. They're beer drinkers and poker players. And then there's Willem Dafoe, who's Sergeant Elias, and they smoke weed and like listen to Miles Davis or something. And there's a philosophical conflict within the platoon, right? Who's the better leader, kind of in that sense. And yeah, so it's good. And for that reason, so James Harden obviously is the Willem Dafoe character, and Jimmy Butler would be Tom Berenger, a hard ass, beer drinking hard ass. In this case, wine drinking, because I know that Jimmy's big on expensive wines, him and Mark Wahlberg.
Exactly. Yeah. Remember when the Nets were going to get Jimmy Butler? Oh,
dodged a bullet.
But I don't know now. Now I'm back on Jimmy Butler shit. Okay. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come do pros and cons, positives and negatives of a James Harden to Brooklyn Nets deal.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right. So we get this email, netspod@gmail.com, from Evan Dunatove. Evan, thank you so much. So Evan has pros and cons of a James Harden trade. So we'll just roll through pros and cons. And then I kind of want to get into our own little positives and negatives. And I want to throw some stuff at you. So pros from Evan say that James Harden is very good at basketball. That's confirmed. Superstars win titles. He's a friend of Kevin. And a pro is that haters would be furious. But that's also a con. That another con is that they probably are not going to be able to watch them in person this year if you have that team. If you're a Nets fan, you're really not going to be able to see many games in person. That there'll be lots of crying on Twitter from other fans. And that Nets fans will maybe be too bored with winning too many games, which is the Donald Trump defense. You'll be so sick of winning. We're going to win so much. Thank you, Evan, for that email. It is strange to say, Brian, that there are negatives to a James Harden trade, right? Like, do you feel that though in your soul? Like, we haven't really addressed that, like how you feel about the trade overall, but I think there are negatives, right? There are clear negatives potentially to making a trade that may not outweigh the positives, but they exist. So I'll kind of throw some stuff at you and you hop in and I want to hear what you think. But here are the positives and negatives. And one, they kind of like all are inverses of each other, but if the Nets get James Harden, they basically get the most dynamic offensive player in the NBA, adding to that to their roster. But it basically destroys any chance the Nets are going to have a good defense. Does that concern you at all? That if you had a Kyrie, James Harden, Durant team, that there's almost no way to construct a defense that would be better than not, like, I wouldn't even say they could be league average at that point. I know Harden's better than than previously believed at defense, and Kyrie maybe could be better too. But if you have KD coming off an Achilles, you have three guys on the floor who aren't going to be known for their defense. KD used to be, but not anymore. I don't know if anymore.
So here's my super decisive answer on this. I think in my heart of hearts, my truest feeling is that when you're playing team defense, it is almost it's like 90% contextual. Are we going to be a good team? Oh, we are. Let's actually learn how to play defense and do it pretty well. Are we not going to be a good team? Oh, we're going to be around, you know, 500 and I hope I don't like get hurt and, you know, ruin my financial future. I might play 30% less hard on defense and it would be immeasurable quantitatively and to the naked eye. No one will ever know the difference. It'll be fine. So this is how I sort of think about things. I think there is everyone hates that argument because it does like belie a certain kind of self-serving stereotype that people don't like to cast on NBA players if you're a thinking man and we try to be. But there is a certain contextual element to it, right? If you're not going to be good, it doesn't really behoove you to play super hard defense. So I'm of the mind that when you're playing for championships, if you are a semi-functional, like in this case, superstar athlete, that you can learn how to play comprehensive team defense enough to be competitive at the highest levels. That said, it's tough because the Lakers, you know, like LeBron James is unquestionably an elite defender. Anthony Davis, sort of unquestionably an elite defender. That's part of their construct of the team in a totally different way. That's like one of the genetic makeups. So like, I think it puts us in a great position in this world to get out of the East, you know? But I think, I guess, I don't know, but I think I'm getting mealy mouth now. Now I'm doing it. Jose, I got to remember Jose. I have to remember Jose. But I'm saying, like, I do think that, like, a team who's hanging their head on defense has a slight on-paper advantage to a team that doesn't, but I do think it's slight. And the kind of offensive weaponry that we're talking about is unparalleled, maybe.
Yeah, so that it kind of dovetails into one of my other positives. It all mushes together when you talk about offense. It would be the greatest shooting team ever. Like, whoever plays center, DeAndre Jordan or Jared Allen, if you re-sign Joe Harris and you bring in James Harden, I looked up like James Harden's spot-up shooting because he doesn't do it. Like, I was like, what are the stats? And he's like a 42% spot-up shooter, which is good. I'm meaning like he's probably open if he's receiving a pass. But Harden's whole game is having the ball, step backs, shots in rhythm. That has been everything he does. And I can't even imagine in my mind what it would be like if he was just receiving a pass while wide open and having a shot. I think it would go in 80% of the time of how good of a shooter he is off the dribble and on step backs. So you would have Joe Harris, KD, Kyrie, and James Harden. That is better than what the Warriors had, even with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson, because you add Joe Harris, and then really it's only the center who's a bad shooter. And you could even run out lineups where, like, KD is, you know, the five, and you add in another good shooter off the bench, whoever that would be, and they're, like, the five-out basketball that you would have would just be, like, it'd be jaw-dropping, and it would be the greatest offensive team of all time. And we'll talk about coaching later, but, like, they do have Mike D'Antoni on the bench, someone who understands offense at, like, the highest of levels.
Well, see, with that team as constructed, like, the pros and cons being what they are, I get it. But as long as you get to the playoffs, I feel pretty confident that you're getting at least an Eastern Conference Finals, and I would wager a pretty strong bet that they make it into the finals. That's like it's like a level of confidence yeah. I just don't have right now with the team. Like, I don't get me wrong, I think we have a competitive, you know, as competitive as anyone else in the East, maybe potentially, but it's still like I can squint and be like, yeah, we're right there. And in this case, this puts us over into a different echelon, right?
Well, and so this is another inverse positive negative thing, but if you get James Harden, that is your purest insurance of whether KD is not 100% himself, or if Kyrie continues to have injury issues, which he's had over his whole career. Like, as much as we love Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, they would have to be included in this James Harden trade, by the way. Like, they could do 80% of Kyrie or KD or 70%. James Harden could do 110% of Kyrie. And if Kyrie continues to have injury issues, and let's say he gets knocked out and they don't have James Harden on the roster at this point in this scenario, well, the Nets with Kevin Durant and let's say Dinwiddie and LeVert, that is still a really good team, but that's not a finals team necessarily. If you have James Harden and it's just James Harden, Kyrie, and KD, and if you lose one of those three guys for injury for a span of time, you're still probably the best team in the East, you know? And I think the Nets will still have enough on their roster to fill out a representative team. We just saw the Lakers win an NBA championship with basically just LeBron and AD. I know we all love KCP. KCP is suddenly the best player in the NBA from what we're being told. Rondo has been resurrected. But that was basically just two guys. And the Nets would guarantee themselves if one of their big three, I'm talking about if James Harden was on the team, got hurt, guarantee him someone on the team. Now, I think if you got James Harden, it may spell the end of Kyrie Irving as a Brooklyn Net.
What? No.
Because I can't imagine that those three guys, as much as they may be friends and they all text emojis to each other, would ever be able to coexist for more than a season together. We just saw James Harden was out of Houston to get away from Russell Westbrook on some level. And we were told previously how good of friends they are. They're still apparently friends, but they don't want to coexist on a basketball court. Paul George may be on the trading block. And Kawhi demanded that the Clippers get Paul George so that he would come to the Clippers. We are seeing over and over again, players like to get together, and then they decide they don't want to be together. And I feel bad for Kevin Durant. It's almost like I am a child of divorce, Brian. It would almost be like, yeah. I sympathize with Kevin because it would almost be like if he was in court, in family court, James Harden's his mother, Kyrie Irving's his father, and the judge said to him, little Kev, you can only choose one to live with for the rest of your life.
Why? Why are we triangulating? Why does it have to be this way?
Because this is what has to happen. Like, because there's no way Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant are a sustainable threesome. This would be like in a three-way love triangle.
Well, nothing lasts forever.
How many love triangles last a long time in your life, Brian? If people don't know, Brian's
I have the two king cats. Of love triangles. I have two cats. and I like them. Well, actually, one I don't like at all. So in that case, you're right. But
he's Kyrie Irving.
No, but here's the thing. The reason that these things break apart is a lack of winning the stupid championship, right? I mean, like, even Kevin Durant stuck out that situation that he obviously was never really a perfect fit, because it wasn't even just a three-way. There was a four-way. It was a foursome over in Golden State. And, you know, I'm down with threesomes, foursomes. That's too much. That's way too much going on. And I think he felt that way too. He felt pushed out of the room, and I get it. But I'm just saying, like, I think that the success makes the longevity a little bit easier. Had Westbrook and Harden gotten to the conference finals, had Paul George gotten to the conference finals, I think you'd be hearing a different tune. But these are underachievers at the very moment. These are superstar underachievers. And that's a very different plight, okay? It's a very different situation.
So who's better, Kyrie Irving or James Harden?
This is a sports talk. This is not a sports talk radio show, Mike. I refuse to engage.
I'm just saying, as much as maybe, and so there's also a report out there, I forget who it's from. You know, we're getting all these, like, there's little threads of information that we're all trying to pull together. Someone reported that the Nets mind meld community, some of the Nets players are really in favor of James Harden being here, while other prominent so much.
Where are you getting this from?
This was, like, I think someone from, like, the Houston Chronicle or something like that.
He said there is a player on the Nets who's not in favor of this?
Well, the idea is, if that is a true report, that it's probably Kyrie Irving. It's not Kevin Durant, because it's been reported by Zach Lowe and Ramona Shelburne and Woj that Kevin Durant and Harden discussed in LA workouts, hey, man, maybe we would play together and how that could work and what it would mean. Kevin Durant is probably obviously in favor of James Harden being here in Brooklyn. And if anyone has any sway in the organization, there's only two other players I could think of that have enough power that would not want it to happen. It'd be DeAndre Jordan and Kyrie Irving. Now, that's maybe not necessarily true. You know, that could just be, I mean, there's a lot of, like, interference and we're not really getting to the truth of the matter, right? But if you're Kyrie Irving, do you really want James Harden?
I'm
going
to get
team?
A source on this Houston Chronicle. I feel like this is Mike Smilts Chronicle. That's what it sounds like to me.
I saw there's a very legit report. It was on Twitter. Okay. It had to be legit, yeah, right. You know?
Fair enough.
Anyways, so I think there are clear positives and negatives, and I'll do some quick ones more. Harden is definitely better than Bradley Beal and Drew Holiday. So, you know, I think my sort of, like, do we really want to do the Drew Holiday trade? The thing I would hold back is, like, could you get a better player with the number of assets you would need to get Drew Holiday? James Harden would end that conversation. There's no more holding assets. You throw everything at the Rockets, right? A positive but kind of a negative, I guess, if you're Josiah, is, like, yeah, your team's expensive, but, like, who cares at that point? I don't think it's also a small thing that James Harden is probably one of the more popular players in China. And that does matter to Josiah. That's not like, you know, James Harden was on the Rockets. The Rockets were obviously the favorite team of China before Daryl Morey.
You're so good at that, Mike. That's a real pro.
And that matters to a man whose fortune is tied up into, you know, in China. You know, that matters that a player on his team maybe appeal to James Harden, that he could get into that pipeline, that Alibaba pipeline that Josiah
has. Did you know, here's a neat fact of the day, Mike. You ever listen to that podcast, Acquired? It's like a business podcast. They did one about the NBA, the history of the business of the NBA. And China was, I think, dating back to, like, the 1920s or something, because of the first YMCA, like, Christian outreach, whatever things. Like, we exported basketball to China, like, really early on, and they had some of the earliest international leagues were already in China, like, way before we thought, or before I thought. So they have their own traditions there that date way back, Mike, way back.
But to add another fun fact of the day, Magic Johnson, who's one of the best followers on Twitter, I guess that's how you could describe him, meaning that, like, he is known for saying the most obvious thing you could possibly say on Twitter. This is what he says about Drew Holiday. He says, I love this. Drew Holiday is an available player on the trade market.
What?
Thank you, man.
That
checks all the boxes and can play both guard positions. He's the best defender at the guard position and can score and dish the ball. And then he added Drew Holiday on Twitter. That's not
so
how you do this,
funny.
Magic.
He uses it like how, you know how, like, when your parents, or, like, when people are like, Twitter's so dumb, like, I don't care if you ate a piece of pizza, like, who cares? That's, you know, like, nobody really uses Twitter for that, but except Magic Johnson, he actually does.
That is so, when Ashton Kutcher was the king of Twitter, that was, I guess, the way that we thought Twitter was being used,
right?
Was to say,
hey, I'm walking down the street eating pizza. It's like, no one ever, I'm going to start a Twitter account just so I can do that.
It's like your parents' examples of mocking Twitter, that mocking tweets that never happened.
Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So I do want to throw something by you here for a sec. Positive, negatives, inverses. Nash, Steve Nash. Okay. So I would say from everything we know about Steve Nash is that he probably has the EQ superpowers to be able to sort of juggle Kyrie and Harden and KD.
You think so?
But do you think that is almost too much? In a coach's first year, where and this coach has never coached before in his life, does it give you any pause that he would be the guy trying to mold and meld KD, Kyrie, and James Harden?
Totally. That's a huge – yeah, of course. It's a huge lift. I mean, it's not even just on the EQ, on every level. I mean, like, that's a you're really in the managing egos business at that point, which is – thank goodness you've got Mike D'Antoni and all the other bros around, experienced bros, because the X's and O's are not themselves super self-evident either. I mean, like, that's a lot of firepower, but it's a lot of overlapping firepower and stuff that you really should have a very clear idea of how you're going to implement. And not to say that Steve Nash doesn't think that way. I have no idea. Maybe he could be a basketball genius and, you know, we're all good, but that's a steep learning curve, especially day one when you're expected. I mean, we're coming out like – thinking like what 65 regular season wins? I mean, like, what if you have that team? Like, what's all right? 70 wins, right? Here we go. In a 72,
what would be a disappointment season, if they only won 55 games? It'd be like, what's wrong with you, Steve Nash? You should be fired. Yeah. Let's move Mike D'Antoni into your spot.
Well, we do have to do some like math about what the expected win totals will be, because we're 10 games later this season, right? That's still the plan, 72 game season.
Yeah, 72 games.
Yeah.
A lot of it would be, I think a lot of it would be in division. And again, no one cares about the division, but it would matter this year. So the division for the Nets, again, is the Celtics, the Raptors, the Sixers, and the Knicks.
Brutal.
So if the Knicks lost out on Chris Paul, he's going to Phoenix. So if they don't make the Russell Westbrook trade, they may not win a game all season.
Yeah.
And which would probably be good for the Knicks franchise, actually, if they just tanked.
If they sit on their hands this season. If they can wrest the controls away from Tom Thibodeau, who definitely wants to pull the trigger. I can feel it. I can feel it down in my plums.
Well, and this draft, not the one that's going to happen on Wednesday, right, but the one after it, the 2021 draft,
people
supposed to be amazing.
Pretty hype about it already. And 2022, people are equally hyped about. Is what I hear.
So this is the time, if you're the Knicks, like, I am almost proud of the Knicks for not, because they could have trumped the Suns' offer. The Suns gave up eventually, basically, like, I mean, fine veterans and Rubio and Oubre and something else. And then like a first round pick in the future. 2022, I think, was the first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Not the one in this current draft where they've 10 overall. Like, the Knicks could have just put like Mitchell Robinson and a couple other pieces together.
You think?
And I think the Knicks could have topped the Suns' offer, particularly if they put like a 2021 first round pick of their own in there. If I'm the Thunder, I'd rather have that than the Suns situation.
Fair.
But kind of proud of them. They didn't do it. Anyways.
Proud.
Few last thoughts on the James Harden.
Mike's last country. Thoughts. This is the segment. Closing time.
Everyone who doesn't want DeAndre Jordan on the Nets, this could almost be the DeAndre Jordan escape hatch. Because DeAndre's from Houston. Could you convince DeAndre, hey, you know, we really want to send you home. I know everyone's been like, you know, really feeling really emotional and distant because, you know, of COVID and we've all been quarantining. I think it would be good for you, DeAndre, if we send you just home to Houston. You know, let's get you in this Houston Rockets trade. You get to go with Karis and Dinwiddie.
just go home, you know, mm-hmm. make your money. It's tax-free in Texas. I don't know if you know that, DeAndre. Of course he does. Let's send you over there. Let's get you back home. You wear that red and white Rockets jersey. You retire a Rocket. You retire in your hometown. And then the Nets can slide Jared Allen into the starter spot, which is what everyone wants. So that's, you know, just a small little possibility.
I feel like you could, like, if you're on the phone, be like, yeah, so let's do this trade. It's going to be Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Jared Allen. Like it's merge. You could smush it so that you could trick them. And then in the margins, you write DeAndre instead of Jared Allen. Right? So something there.
The other thing, Mike D'Antoni does know James Harden better than anyone else in the NBA at this point. He knows how good James Harden is, of course. And if there's any coach in the NBA that I would trust with maybe molding all this together, I would say it's Mike D'Antoni. Obviously, he's just an assistant coach and not the head coach. So there's a difference. Can I ask you something, Brian?
Oh, please.
Do you think there's any part of James Harden that could conform his game into like with Kyrie and KD? Because I don't see, and again, that doesn't mean that it can't work. I just don't see it happening because he's played with Chris Paul. Didn't really happen. He's played with Russell Westbrook and it didn't really happen. I don't know why this would be any different.
It is funny to think like, all right, so we had the three guys, who's going to be the guy that changes for, and we've got, and it's, you know, the what sucks is that it's going to be Kyrie Irving was going to be the guy that's going to be forced to be like, be, you know, pass first for the first time after not ever being that way, even when you had LeBron James on your team. And you're right. Maybe that's where the wedge begins to get sunk in. But yeah, no, none of them are going to want to do that. And especially least of all, James Harden. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. So I think my biggest concerns to wrap it up is defense wouldn't be great. But if you look, the offense would be otherworldly and there'd almost be like there would not be a cure to stop the Nets offense. The Nets offense would run rampant. It would be like,
it'd be awesome. It'd be super fun. Are you kidding? I mean, even with all the BS about like he shoots free throws, fine. I don't give a, we're stacking dubs. Are you kidding me? Chips and dubs. I'll watch free throws, the whole 48 minutes of free throws. I don't care. Give me dubs.
Biggest concern is defense, and it is like that is a Harden has never shown an ability to be a complimentary player except for when he was with OKC, but that was a decade ago basically. So that is a huge issue for a coach like Steve Nash, who's never done this before, to figure this out. He is a genius. We all understand he's a basketball genius. So is Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was a bad head coach. Bad, not good. Like, not terrible, but not good. And he's now been, you know, out of two jobs because of it. So just being a basketball genius doesn't mean that you're going to be a great coach. But if you circle around this long, we haven't really said it. If you are the Nets, you do this trade.
You do it. You do it.
If you can do it. I'm not questioning that. I'm just bringing up the positive. If you can do this trade, you do everything you can to get it done. You give up Caris, Spencer, Jared Allen, three first-round picks, and a pick swap. If you can throw Torian Prince in there and then bring back Robert Covington, then it's 100% definitely do. If you can maybe bring back PJ Tucker or something too instead of Covington, fine. You do it. You make it happen. And we're flying high on the Zeppelin that is.
It's a dream. It's fun to dream. We'll see. We'll see, Mike.
We have the NBA draft on Wednesday. Brian and I will pod at some point after the draft because either there'll be a trade or the Nets take someone really fun and exciting at number 19 overall. So we will be in your ears so fast. It'll be amazing.
Mikey, thank you so much for having me. Oh my God, it was so much fun.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.